What's up, everybody? It's Michael Tucker with the Real Estate Success Strategies podcast. Today, I have a heavy hitter on with us. Mike Woodfield is on with us, and today he's going to be talking about operations and asset management. Now, this is something a lot of people don't talk about because a lot of people don't know how to actually do it right and do it well at scale. And so Mike's going to be talking about that today in our podcast. But just so you know who Mike is, Mike is the COO and partner of Obsidian Capital. He's grown and scaled underperforming assets and businesses to millions of dollars. He's managed millions of dollars in assets. And to be honest, I'm not going to give all of his intro because I'm just going to like probably make it sound a lot, you know, I don't know. I don't think I could actually describe how good this guy is and what he's doing. So let's just bring him on. Mike, man, how's it going, brother?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime, man. And we got connected through David Tupin. So if you guys listened a couple podcasts ago, we had David on. Dude, that guy is just crushing it. I love his zeal for real estate and apartment syndication. So Mike, man, tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got to Obsidian Capital working with David today.
Sure. Absolutely. David is, I don't know anybody that loves apartments more than that guy. So my story, I took a job out of college working for a venture capitalist group out of Chicago. They took a flyer on me, cause I had a, journalism degree, in public relations, nothing to really talk about. I was more of an entrepreneur trying to start businesses in college. Wasn't really much focused on the studies. And I said, I want to run a business. And they're like, well, there's an opportunity out in Atlanta, Georgia. And so they sent me out to Atlanta. And I turned a failing business around. There hadn't been a manager in the business or really anybody running operations. It was kind of like the wild, wild west. And I turned that company around. It was a service industry company. And we moved it from about $1 million in annual revenue to about $3 million in annual revenue in about a year and a half.
Wow, man, that's a big turnaround just for a year and a half.
Yeah. And I went from zero management experience to overseeing 45 people that directly reported to me. So it was baptism by fire. and it was a wild ride, very stressful, but the best thing that could ever happen to me. I was mentored by two outstanding businessmen, that they each owned roughly about 10 to 15 businesses that they currently manage. From there, Glenn Gonzalez and I had known each other for about 10 years. And his company at the time was really taking off. He was on a trajectory to purchase 5,000 units in about 3 years. And he called me up and said, hey man, I know you're getting a lot of business experience. Seems like you're doing well. Would you love to come learn the business from me? And I said, well, heck yeah. I mean, I'd love to jump into real estate, but I had something pretty good going on. So it was a lot of discussion and negotiating with Glenn. And he brought me on as an asset manager, and another baptism by fire there. I went from zero asset management or real estate experience to asset managing 1500 units.
Wow. And let's just pause for a second, and I want to properly set this up for people that may not understand what you mean asset management. Most people will, but let's just discuss this. And what is that asset management? What did it look like at the time?
So asset management, when you go and you buy a property, there's many people that it's not easy to buy a property. It's not, and it's a struggle and a battle. It's a fist fight almost to get it across the finish line. But once you've gotten it across the finish line, it's almost like people forget that they purchased a business, right? If you have a, you know, 300 unit property or even a 50 unit property, there's millions of dollars that flow through that checking account, that operating account every year. And you know, it's a very legitimate operation that needs to be run well, or else you'll leave a lot of money on the table, just like any other business, whether you run an ice cream shop or whatever you run, apartment is no different. And so an asset manager in my role was to step in and maximize revenue and really maybe trim fat on operating expenses, or maybe put more operating expenses on the property depending on what the needs were, and increase the NOI. And I also ran the CapEx or renovations of the property. I worked closely with a general contractor. We did probably close to $30 million in renovations over those 5,000 units that I asset managed for Glenn. So I worked very closely with the general contractor, doing draws, getting him paid on time, tracking the renovations, making sure quality control was there, and then really assisting and being the liaison between owner and property management. So those are some of the jobs as an asset manager that I oversaw.
Love it. Thank you for setting that up for our audience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So from meeting up with Glenn, worked with Glenn for about 4 years at his old company. He had a partnership that didn't work out. So he started selling off his properties. I stayed with him doing that. We acquired about 30 properties on that part, that company. And we also sold almost all those properties within 2 years. So he sold at the right time for sure. Somewhere in that mix, I had connected Rod Cleef and Glenn Gonzalez for Glenn to be on his podcast. And then through that, he somehow met David at a conference or something like that. And Glenn came back and said, "I met this sharp kid at a conference. We got to meet with him and talk about him helping us with acquisitions." And so David actually, for the first few properties, we were kind of a JV partner. And then it worked out so well that we formed a partnership, and David acts as the acquisitions and the CFO. I act as the CEO of the operations, and then Glenn is the CEO. So he has about 30 years of experience. So he's kind of, we call him the godfather. So he kind of, he's really good at putting deals together and has deep relationships. So that's the structure of the business. And I guess I've had transacted on my own apartments with David and Glenn about 700 units now. A fair bit of experience there now.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing, you know, your past experience. It seems like you know what you're doing then. And
I don't know about that, but there might be some viewers that disagree, but you know, we'll see.
Gotcha. Well, I wanted to talk today a lot about operations and that asset management, because I really feel like there's so many people, you know, they feel like the biggest job, exactly like you said earlier, was, you know, purchasing the property. They also forget that once you purchase it, you know, there's a lot to do on the back end. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like, what systems, which I know apartments is a lot bigger, you know, versus, you know, going out and flipping one or two properties at, you know, at a time, right?
Oh yeah, sure.
A lot bigger. But whenever it comes to apartment buildings, what systems do you have in place, or, you know, did you learn at the beginning to put in place to help you manage and operate more efficiently?
That's a great question. It's a very broad question too, because there's so many different levels of operations that go into these apartments. I'll give you a few examples of systems that I have in place that I've felt like really helped me be in the know and help me drive forward the vision of our ownership group. One being, I track all the leases and renewals that we do monthly at each property we own. And that's kind of a tedious process, but what it helps me to know is, at a property management level, are we moving revenue up or are we moving it down? Asset management really is a function of controlling the revenue, and where is it going and why, right? And so a lot of times what I've seen with our property managers, bless their hearts, they're very busy, but they don't really keep track of necessarily each lease and what's going on. It's kind of a whirlwind for them, just trying to keep things going at the property. But you know, if you promise an investor on a syndication a certain return, well, that's got to be tied directly to your income. And, you know, if you're not hitting certain rents, then you're not going to hit your pro forma goals. And they may not invest with you in the future if you don't. So it's very important that you're getting into the details and seeing exactly what's happening, right? So I track every lease and renewal, and I compare it to the previous lease that or the other rent that they were at on a renewal to see what the increase was. That way, I always know where we're going, you know, and how much are we getting per unit on a you know, if it was a value add play, are we getting $150 increase per unit? Are we averaging $130 increase per unit? You know, whatever it may be. So I track that monthly. I also have an asset management tracker that I go through and just make sure I checked all the boxes so I don't forget anything, whether that's reviewing an AP report to make sure our payables aren't creeping up. We've worked with some management companies that aren't so good at paying payables. Maybe their accounting team's a little bit on the skinny side because that's expensive,
right?
Non-revenue generating part of a property management company. And so our payables don't get paid. And then, you know, some liens could get filed on the property and that could put you into risk with your lender. So reviewing the payables, reviewing accounts receivable, seeing where that delinquency is. Looking at the rent roll for red flags, those types of things, that checklist makes, you know, it points me in that direction every month. So I don't get too busy to look at the details. So those are two reports that I use. I have an asset management dashboard that shows, you know, basically your budget versus your actual on your revenue and your operating expenses and your net income. And then it kind of spits out a estimated value based off a cap rate in your NOI. So those are basically the three reports that I use every month to keep our assets in you know, in line.
Love it. So. Well, it sounds like it's all about systems and you know, and being detailed. I think that's something that for me, that's something I struggle with. If I want to be honest. I am very unorganized. And so my question for you is this something that you grew into, or is this like, cause I know certain personality types, like for me, you know, I can't even keep anything organized in my office or my desk or anything.
Sure,
that something that you grew into learning how to do, or is that something you've always been good at?
Oh man, that's, I think it's both. I think I have a knack for operations and management of people and I work well with people, and it doesn't hurt to be likable, you know. People like to work with people they like,
right?
As it turns out. But also the systems part, which you're talking about, and the details. I would say that I've had to learn that portion of the business, you know, of any business, maybe through kind of the school of hard knocks, you know. Not looking at the details and paying attention to the details can be very costly in this business and can cost you a lot of money and your investors a lot of money. And so keeping track of and looking at those details and having systems in place to make sure that you're always knowing what's going on is highly important. So I would say the school of hard knocks, a little bit of my own natural self and just, you know, wanting to be in a better operator, maybe that combination is what drives me to look at the details and be organized.
I love it. I love it. Another question for you. And this one goes more on the renovating side. So you said over, 5,000, was it 5,000 units you guys manage, or you manage about $30 million in renovations. Is that correct?
Yeah, roughly. Maybe more. I'd have to go, could be double that. I don't know.
But it's just somewhere right in there. That's a lot of renovations, man.
Yeah. 30 million sounded good. I think it probably is a little bit more, but it's a lot of renovations.
Either way. So how do you guys, so this is very, very basic ground level. Let's talk about renovations on apartments, because there's a lot of people that are going to be listening to this and they're just getting started in apartments, or maybe they've rented or not rented, fixed and flipped a few houses and they want to get into apartments. What would you say is the main difference, and what advice would you give for people that are wanting to go to value add apartments whenever it comes to renovation? What tips would you give?
Okay. here's a good tip for everybody. Pay your contractor on time. If you don't do that, then he won't work for you for free, as it turns out. So, having a really good relationship with somebody, if you have multiple projects going on at once, somebody that has the balance sheet to maybe carry you for a few weeks while, you know, you're waiting for the lender to release some money from an escrow account or something like that is really important. So building those relationships is highly important. But keeping your general contractor paid in these big apartment renovations is huge because, you know, what drives this business? It's occupancy, right? It's, and if, for example, you're renovating units at a snail's pace, those vacant units are burning tons of vacancy loss and you're losing tons of money through that. But if you can keep your contractor paid, he's going to be very motivated to turn those units around as quickly as possible, knowing that there's money there for him when he's done with that job. So I would say that's hugely important and it's overlooked. Doing a draw is not fun. It's tedious. It takes a lot of time and it requires your attention to get it done right or else it gets kicked back by the lender or whatever. So getting those draws done on time, submitted, getting your contractor paid timely on these big renovations is highly important. So yeah. I would put that almost top.
Almost. All right, cool. Well, how do you find the right contractors to do a 50, 100 unit apartment building, you know, or even bigger, you know, or do you do multiple contractors or do you just let one take it over? Because I'd say that's a lot of work, you know, to have one crew come in there. How does that work?
So if the largest one we've done was a 650 unit apartment complex, so that's quite a big project. And I think the CapEx budget on that was about $4.5 million. What we historically have done is we've brought in one general contractor that does the whole project for us turnkey. Now that's not the cheapest route to go. The cheaper route to go may be, and I say may, operating word there, might be cheaper, maybe cheaper because you could go in and you could hire your own subcontractors and you could run them and have them come in. Now the time that that's going to take for you to run that process and the headache that that will be is enormous. Mm. You know, you may save money, but you're not going to be out buying more deals. So you really have to do an analysis there to say, you know, how much is my time worth spent in other places versus hiring a general contractor to handle this for me. So we work with a company called Exodus Construction up in Dallas. They've done most of our renovations and they're a fantastic company. I would say that they've grown with us. So their processes have gotten better as our processes have gotten better, which has been really great for us. I mean, at this point we're kind of lockstep working well together. They really take a lot of the headache out of running these renovations. Basically what you have to do as an owner or an asset manager is, you know, looking over their shoulder a little bit to make sure that their work is quality and that they're meeting the timelines that they said that they would meet and kind of hold their feet to the fire on the Gantt chart that they provided you. So hopefully that answers your question.
No, that was awesome, yeah, man. So how'd you go about, like, I'm just curious how you went about finding that right contractor. How'd you go about finding Exodus? Is that something you just get a bunch of quotes? Cause you know, just as much as I do, you know, finding people to take on big projects that, you know, I've had people back out of stuff, you know, it's just always a headache it seems like. So what'd that look like?
So absolutely. Exodus is a decade-long relationship that Glenn's had that's become my relationship now. And it was just a lot of trust and a lot of work. It was a small job for them in the beginning, then a little bit bigger job. And it slowly grew into, you know, they can take anything on. And we refer them to a lot of our friends that are in the industry just because they're really good. But I would say a good route to go would be contact people in the market that are doing what you do, and ask them who they use, you know. And a lot of people do it themselves. A lot of people do the third party route, and just get a feel from other operators and what they're doing. So reach out to people on LinkedIn. If you don't know anybody else, you know, go find them and get some referrals from those people. Because, I mean, generally speaking, people want to help other people, and they'll give you a thumbs up or thumbs down to contractors. And anyways, I've found that to be the best. Just go find people that have worked with them and ask.
Love it, man. So now that you're at Obsidian, are you taking on deals currently on yourself, or no, is it all just through Obsidian Capital?
Yeah. So all the deals that come through, we as partners, Glenn and David and I, we all have to give a thumbs up. So there's three thumbs up that it takes. And, you know, sometimes we disagree on what's a good deal and what's not a good deal, which is good. I mean, everybody has a different perspective. When we all have the same perspective, it's really easy to move forward. So, you know, if we all give a thumbs up, then we can move forward with it under Obsidian. If there's any thumbs down, then we don't move forward under Obsidian. So that's basically how it goes with our current setup. So
I love it. And so from your experience, it sounds like you've been in a bunch of partnerships before. And yeah. I want to kind of pick your brain. What do you feel like, you know, makes a good partnership? Because there's some people out there that are probably be like, well, I'm looking for somebody to run my operation side of things. Or maybe I'm out here. I need to find somebody that has the money, you know, the money raising part of the business. You know, what would you say is the key to raising good partnerships?
Good partnerships. In a joint venture sense or an actual partnership, like a long-term relationship partnership between people that want to go buy multiple assets together, because those are two different things.
Right.
A joint venture deal, you know, it's a one and done. You know, hey, I got this deal. Hey, you have the equity. Do you want to partner? Sure. You know, and maybe you work through
that. Let's talk long term.
Okay. So long term, you know, I think the thing that ruins partnership is greed or dishonesty. I think that those are the two constants that I've seen that have ruined partnerships is, someone gets too greedy or someone gets dishonest and it, just doesn't jive with the other partner and it blows up things. So I think as long as you're honest with each other and you don't get greedy, you can make most things work. I think also a lot of times when people have some success, they think they can do it on their own. And so they go off on their own. They say, I'm just going to do it on my own. And that's fine, but maybe you'll find out that, you're not so successful without your partner. Who knows? Right. Maybe you will be, but, I think that greed, or thinking the grass is greener on the other side of the hill, gets people a lot.
Right.
And so
it really sounds like you're all about, which I am too, but just from the conversation I'm having with you, you're all about being a good person. Cause like you were talking about, you know, taking your business or the business at the beginning, right. And turning it into a performing asset, you know, that was all about making sure the employees and the people you were around, you know, you were likable for those people. And now, you know,
when
it comes to partnerships, you know, is that something that you try to build your life off of, or is that just something that you constantly are seeing?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm religious and, you know, I have strong morals and was raised with good morals from good parents. And, you know, those things are in my blood, I would say. You know, they shouldn't leave you or exit your body when it comes to a business transaction, just because, you know, it's a business deal now, I can forget what I believe in. So I would say that if you operate and you are a good person, that you'll probably be successful, or at least have success in your own mind, maybe not to the world standard of what success means, but maybe you'll be at peace with yourself at the end of the day, knowing that you were honest and tried to do the right thing. So that's kind of my philosophy, which maybe isn't everybody's, but works for me.
Right. Well, I love picking people's brain, just hearing, you know what works for them, what doesn't. You know, I'm a you know, I'm a believer in Christ, and, you know, we, mm-hmm. I have the same, you know, philosophy as, hey, you know, do unto others that, you know, you'd want them to do to you. So, I love it, man. I love it. Yeah. And, so what's, if you could, we'll wrap this up, man. I know you're busy. You're probably out there. Crushing. Oh, you're not busy. All right, cool. Let's talk for now.
Not busy at all, man. I got plenty of time for this. This is great.
Awesome, man. Well, I love it. And I really appreciate you, you know, just pouring out everything. And so I had this question, and this is mainly for me. And I don't know, maybe the audience will get this as well. But what do you think the big difference is between what you said is pretty much the same thing, but operating and managing a business versus apartments? You said it's pretty much the same thing, but are there any differences, or, you know, is there anything let me rephrase this real quick.
Okay.
I'll ask you this question in a different way.
Okay.
To turn a business from underperforming to performing versus an apartment underperforming to performing.
That's a good question. No, there's no difference. I think that, you know, the jargon and, you know, the industry changes, right? But, you know, what drives any business? Sales. Go lease apartments. That's a sale.
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, I guess I'm being, maybe I'm overstating this a bit, but I mean, it's,
no, I'm glad you answered
that. Yeah. I mean, it's the same stuff. I mean, you know, if I was to go in and take over a pest control company, right? and their operations were suffering and people were canceling their contracts, you know, what would I do? Well, I'd probably go in and I would probably find and put a team together that was motivated to go out and make new sales and that was motivated to provide really good customer service. And then I would go and sell as much as I possibly could until operations were at its max capacity. And then I would go hire some more people. And then I would go sell more. And then I would operate at max capacity and I'd sell, and I'd go sell some more until it was just going crazy. And that's what I would do with that business. It's the same thing with these apartments, right? You go and you buy them, and you buy them hoping that you can take people on your team and you can increase the operations and you can find the money that the other guy didn't find, right? Whether that's through other income, or maybe he's paying a cable contract for everybody the property, but he doesn't really need to do that, and I'm just going to cancel that when I get in there. And you know, the residents can pay their own cable. You know, I don't need to pay for that, whatever it is. Or maybe he's not billing back, you know, utilities, and you can in that area, and people will pay back 50% of their, you know, gas, electric, and, you know, water, sewer, and so on and so forth, right? So it's just finding opportunities to make more money and increasing operations to maximize revenue. And, you know, I don't really see it as anything different than, you know, running another business. The jargon and the industry is different, but, you know, if you were successful at running some business, you could probably be successful to some degree at running an apartment business. Now, I say that with a caveat. I've met a lot of people that were very successful that got into apartments and got killed in apartments. And it's because they forget that it's not just about buying the apartment, it's about operating them as well. So here, let me give you a few buzzwords. High level. Have you heard that before in business?
Yeah.
Give me the high level. Let's talk about the high level. It's always high level this, high level that. Quick and dirty. Give me the high level. I freaking hate that. It's like, it's insane. Like, these people act like they own a business that has 30,000 employees, like they're Michael Dell or Steve Jobs. Like, yeah, give those guys the high level, right? But when you own a few apartments, you don't need the high level. You need the in the weeds. You need the details. You're operating a business. You know, so don't get too high level. When you're really successful and you've been a successful doctor or something like that, you may have the tendency to think that, oh, I can just do high level this, blah, blah, blah. No, you need to learn that business. You need to get into the weeds. You need to asset manage your own deals. You need to get out there and figure out what's going on in the property. And then when you grow to a certain point where you're at capacity, you hire somebody, you train them up exactly how you want it done, and you oversee that person, right? But don't get so high level and, you know, afraid to get in the weeds and roll your sleeves up and get down there and fix a toilet or patch a hole in the wall if you need to every now and again, you know?
Right.
So that's my shtick. That's my soapbox. I hate when people say high level this, high level that, don't have time for operations, because they're just planning to fail at that point if that's their mentality. Now, I understand growth and not getting locked down in the weeds, but when you're starting out, you really need to be in those weeds to know the process. You have to know the process. So I've seen a lot of people get into this business and they can talk the talk, they can't walk the walk. They've never done it. They've never been on ground level operating the property, and they get lied to and they get misinformation and they lose a lot of money because of it. So,
right. Well, I really like that. It's so funny you said that, because actually we're just having a conversation with a friend who flips houses very successfully. And a student of his was asking him, you know, like, hey, I want to, you know, hire this job out. He's like, dude, you just started. You need to learn how to do it yourself first before you find yourself. But that's his philosophy is, you know, at least know what you're, you know, what you're hiring out.
Yes.
So I love that, man. And so what advice would you give for somebody, like, let's say they're going to buy their first apartment? Cause that's like me, to be honest, like we're just now getting into apartment syndication. Like, is there a way, or, you know, what tips do you have? Let's just say it that way. What tips do you have for people that are going to be managing soon their first 20, 30, 50 units that they've never managed before?
Oh, what advice would I give you? Is stay locked in and pay attention to every detail. Don't be afraid to ask questions. I think people these days are so afraid to ask questions because they don't want to look dumb. Dude, look dumb. You know, if that's what it takes to learn, look dumb. I ask so many questions, you know, and I still do. I mean, there's so much to know about this industry that you can't stop asking questions, you know. Find your insurance broker and ask him all the questions about insurance and learn from that expert. Find your mortgage broker and ask him all the questions you possibly can about lending and, you know, different types of loans and bridge loan this and mezz loan that and Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and the differences, right? And interest rates and, you know, everything that you could possibly learn from other people, go find those experts and learn from them. You know, learn from your general contractor the process, you know, of these renovations. Learn from your property manager the process of property management, from leasing an apartment, you know, and the type of lease they use, you know, and what's in the lease agreement. You know, day-to-day operations and collecting rent and their struggles and all kinds of things. Learn the property management software that they use and go in and be able to pull your own reports. You know, just learn from the experts that you already are using to help you, right? So don't be afraid to ask questions. You know, you'll limit yourself so much in your growth if that's your mentality. If you're scared or you don't want to look stupid, you won't grow as quickly as somebody that just asks the questions always. So,
dude, that was good, man. I loved everything you just said. If you're listening to this, I want you to go back and listen to that past like 1 minute, 2 minute section, because for me, I've experienced that for myself. The more questions I ask, that's kind of why I'm asking you these personal questions on here. Cause I'm like, hey, I just want to know. And so don't let the fear of other people, you know, what are they going to say, you know, if I ask this question or, you know, just because you never know what that question could lead you. It could lead you to another level of growth. So is that something you kind of learned at the beginning, or did you ever struggle with that when you first were getting started?
No, I think that's part of my personality. I've always been a curious person. Like you go and ask my parents, and I was like that annoying kid asking, like, why? You know, how does that work? How come? You know, I was that kid. So, you know, I've always been that way. I've always been a little inquisitive. You know, and I think that served me well in kind of learning these new industries and how they work. And the real estate industry is so gigantic, and I'm only on this kind of finite section of multifamily conventional apartments. You know, you could go into tax credit, and you could go into HUD and all these different ways to finance properties that I'm not an expert on. I've worked a little with LURAs and different things like that, but you know, there's so much to know. There's this, it's almost too much. So if, once you stop asking the questions, or you stop listening to podcasts, or you stop learning from other people, then really your growth just is so slow.
So here's my question for you. What do you currently do to keep your growth on the incline?
You know, I continue to ask questions, and you know, the tip I gave you and your audience about talking to experts, I do all the time. You know, we sat down, Glenn and I did 2 weeks ago with a HUD lender. And I picked his brain. I'm like, dude, I'm like a baby. Teach me, you know, what's the gotchas I need to know about if we decide to go the route of HUD financing, you know, and new construction, HUD to perm, you know, what do I need to know about that? You know, and he taught me so much stuff in the 2 hour dinner. You know, it was like I would ask a question, he'd just talk and talk and talk. He's passionate about it, and he's full of knowledge. You know, if you work with some sort of counsel during these transactions, you know, maybe you're doing a 1031 exchange, which, you know, there's so many intricacies to a 1031 exchange and being a TIC member, and what's the tenant in common law and 1031 exchange law, and why do they have to be set up that way, and reading the operating agreements for the TIC agreements and all these different things. You know, there's so much to be learned there, and you start to become an expert in this industry as you start asking questions from these people that are experts. You know, so utilize those people that you're paying to do your insurance and paying to do your financing and are paying to whatever. You know, ask, pick their brains. They're not going to judge you. You know, they just won't. You know, and partner with people that are smarter than you. So, you know, I
The
think that
key is
that's,
probably once you ask those questions to listen, right? Because it's one thing to ask them, but to actually put into play, you know, what you're asking and listening. So that's cool. And I like the way you said that is like you're already paying them, you're already partnering with them in some way. Why not, you know, utilize them? So it's pretty cool. And something else I've been thinking about lately is, you know, you may not have the resources that you need at this time, but somebody else may. So how can you make a partnership? And that's what it seems like you, Glenn, David, you know, you probably did, or Glenn probably didn't have the best, you know, personality for this, but you know, he partnered with you, right? To offset that.
Totally. I mean, you know, I think Glenn's first deal, and he talks about this on his, he's done a podcast. I've heard the story of probably a billion times by now, but you know, his first deal was he found an apartment complex up in Puyallup, Washington, and you know, it was like 40 units, and he went to two vendors he worked with because he was a property manager. And he said, we need $150,000 to buy this thing as a down payment. And he convinced one person to do 75 and the other person to do 75. And Glenn didn't put any money in, but he got a third ownership. And they're like, how does that work? He's like, well, I'm the expert, and I'm the one that brought the deal. And that was a good enough answer for them, you know? And he went and he doubled their money in like a year and a half, and they loved him for it, you know? So, you know, there's a lot of ways. And I understand the barrier of entry to this business is expensive, and it can feel like a lot, but there's a lot of ways if you're creative to gain that barrier of entry. We've worked with a number of people that it was like their first deal, but they found a great off-market deal through a relationship, and they brought it to us and like, now what do I do? And it's like, well, let us show you. So we love working with people like that and have had a lot of success doing that. A lot of deals currently that are going on because of that mentality, you know, someone just bringing a deal to us saying, teach me. Right. And us saying, we'd be happy to. It's going to cost you some though, you know, and it does, but they learn a lot and their barrier entry is gained. Their barrier of entry is gained there.
So. Right. Yeah. Usually it's worth it. So man, I love it. You've been talking about asking questions and being teachable, which is something, yeah, I think we all should, you know, all should adopt. So I always end the podcast with these two kind of main questions is, one, I like hearing what entrepreneurs and real estate investors are passionate about outside of real estate. So what's one thing you're passionate about outside of real estate? And
just one, huh?
Just one. Go for it.
Like hobbies or anything?
Yeah. Anything, hobbies, you know, just something that we probably wouldn't know about you, man. Like,
okay. I'll say this, I guess, other than my kids and my wife, who is really all I care about, and my family, and good friends. I love bow hunting, archery, okay. Huge passion of mine. And I love it because you can never get good at it. It's always something you can practice, you know, and never master. So I love that.
All right. What kind of, do you guys have whitetail or what's that down there?
Dude, we got tigers in Texas. I don't know if you've watched Tiger King, but we got more tigers on private ranches than there are in the wild in the world. But anyways, no, whitetail and hogs and access deer and all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Gotcha. Cause I was gonna say, up here in Kentucky, we don't have much, man. Just whitetail deer, turkey, and that's about it. So
that's a lot of fun.
I hunt as well, so I can relate there. But and then if favorite book, I don't know if you like reading or not, but what's one book, you know, that you really enjoy that, you know, you would recommend others?
So I hate to admit this, but I hate reading.
No, that's cool, man.
I cannot keep my brain focused long enough to read anything but an email. But I love books on tape. I call them books on tape.
The audiobooks and stuff like that.
Audiobooks. Yeah, books on tape. That's funny.
Like, is that showing your age or what? Like
it might be. It might be a little bit. I don't know if it's the gray in my beard that's coming through or not, but yeah, I love audiobooks. I listen to them all the time. So those are huge sources of information for me. And then podcasts, of course, are another huge source of information for me. But my favorite book
or podcast, it doesn't have to be just a book. It could be podcast or just what's one resource that you use and that you liked that you could recommend for our listeners?
One of my favorite books I ever read was The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey. Mm. And, you know, he talks about, you know, people that are in debt and kind of the trap that personal debt is. And walks you through no matter how much money to how to get out of debt. And you know, that was a very impactful book for me that I read right out of college and made a huge impact on my life still to this day. So
gotcha.
I would say that that's one I recommend. It's not very much real estate related, but turns out that if you have a kind of a strong financial backbone in your personal life, it probably will translate to your business life, would be my guess. So
I love that, man. Well, thank you for coming on, dude. I really appreciate it. Is there anywhere where people can find you? You know, if I wanted to put some links below, do you have Instagram or anything like that?
I do have Instagram. I think my handle's at Mike F. Woodfield. I don't really do social media. I'm not a big social media guy. If you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at mike@obsidiancapitalco.com. I mean, you can go to our website, obsidiancapitalco.com, and my LinkedIn and my email are all there. And I'd love if anybody wanted to reach out to me if they need some help with asset management. I do some courses and can get you some good ways to essentially use what I use at your property. So feel free to reach out for me for that stuff. So.
Yeah, definitely. So you said you have courses and like,
Just basically where I'll set up a meeting with you and kind of do a phone call weekly or monthly or whatever you want to do for kind of a coaching session. Like, hey, here's real time. What's going on? What would you love do? It. And then just provide you my operational backbone through my forms and sheets and everything that I use to from reporting to investors to actually doing the asset management to communicating with lenders and all this different stuff. So,
man, I bet that'd be so valuable. I mean, I'm going to definitely hit you back up when we get our first apartment deal. All right. So
do it. Let me know, man. I'd love to help.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate it. If you guys are listening right now, thank you so much for everything. Leave us a review below if you enjoyed this podcast, and maybe even hit the subscribe button for us. You know, it helps us reach more people and keep doing what we do here at the Real Estate Success Strategies Podcast. So until next week, we'll see you again. God bless you all, and we'll see you soon.